had riot police on horseback?
Yeah, I think that there's been this narrative that that there's been rampant anti-Semitism, and this simply is not the case. The people who are being targeted are Muslim students, Arab students, and especially Palestinian students. Police came in on horseback and they attacked protesters. I heard from other students that during an earlier part of the protest, they were clearly targeting brown people and women. I wasn't there personally, but this is what I heard.
Let me ask Sarah King a final question. We have 10 seconds, and that is 48-hour extension goes till tonight. What are the plans? 10 seconds, Sarah.
You know, I think most of the people at the encampment have already agreed to risk arrest, and they won't move unless moved by force or until Colombia concedes to our demands, which are for divestment, amnesty, and financial transparency.
We want to thank you both for being with us. Sarah King, Columbia University Apartheid Divest, and Joshua Sklar at UT Austin. I'm Amy Goodman with Noreen Sheikh.
You're tuned in to listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Engineering Committee meets on the first Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Are you a fan of early rock and roll, doo-wop, rhythm and blues, and 70s rock? If so, The Roots of Rock and Roll is the show for you, and KBOO Portland is the place to be Friday afternoons at 3. Dale Farr will give you a history lesson from the birth of rock and roll through the 50s and 60s. And Ray Bodwell will mine the 60s and 70s for the deep cuts, hidden gems, and variety that you won't hear on generic classic rock stations. So tune in to The Roots of Rock and Roll, Fridays at 3 p.m. on KBOO Portland, your community radio station.
Postmodernism, a reaction against the ideas and values of modernism. Avant-garde, new, unusual, and experimental ideas. KBOO, a community radio station that supports both. Join us in our mission to push the status quo by becoming a member today. Go to kboo.fm/give between now and May 25th to donate and help us reach our $60,000 spring membership drive goal.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Multnomah County introduces a new multi-billion dollar spending plan with a promise to help the houseless and the most vulnerable. The U.S. Supreme Court focuses on Grants Pass, Oregon, in a case about the rights of the houseless community. And why Native voters in the West are going to be a critical voice in this year's elections. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Thursday, April 25th, 2024. I'm Minette Newell. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. The Multnomah County Commission is looking at spending billions of dollars in a new fiscal year that will target its help on the most vulnerable people in the community. That's according to County Commission Chair Jessica Vega Peterson. Here's part of what she said when she announced the plan today.
I am proud of the values reflected in this budget, especially our work to build the blueprint for a healthy Multnomah County. Because when you look at the core work we do as your government, it is about caring for those in our community who are the most vulnerable. Continuing to create and resource the critical safety net that supports those who need it most directed the investments in my proposed $3.96 billion FY25 executive budget, which also helps us build the Multnomah County we need most at this moment. There are hard choices and tough trade-offs here. I started this budget process with a $14 million deficit, but I believe it reflects compromises that mirror our values and priorities. In it, we address some of our greatest community and workforce challenges while also drawing on our greatest strengths, our incredible employees, our partnerships, and our shared effort to meet our challenges. This budget puts focus and clarity on programs that are foundational to a healthy safety net and a one-county approach across all programs, especially our homelessness response system, addressing the fentanyl crisis with increased interventions and treatment options, a healthy library system and network of animal services, adjustments to our elections office to respond to our changing elections landscape, and a strong Multnomah County ready to tackle our tough problems. And through this work, I know we have a way forward that capitalizes on our strengths as Oregon's largest safety net government and truly moves us forward. Like many cities and counties across the country this year, our revenue projections forecast a budget deficit in fiscal year 2025. This means we will not have the capacity to continue all of our current programming, and I have asked, as part of this process, that each department constrain their general fund spending by 3%. But this constraint comes with the clear direction to keep Multnomah County's values as a North Star as departments navigated hard decisions. As a part of our fiscal prudence, we must maintain and grow successful programs that create and advance equity and justice and strengthen the health, safety, and stability of our community members. Our past four budgets featured multi-million dollar investments in the county's pandemic response. They appropriated the federal lifelines we received through the 2020 Coronavirus Aid, Relief, and Economic Security, or CARES Act, and the 2021 American Rescue Plan, or ARP Act. This year, with those federal support dollars no longer available, we know our challenges remain: continued social and economic recovery from the pandemic, wrestling with the complex impacts of homelessness and a systemic lack of affordable housing, community violence, complex behavioral and mental health challenges, addiction, climate change, and economic vitality. But as I believe this budget shows, we can address these challenges by living our values as a community, advancing equity and justice, bringing all partners to the table with a shared commitment to collaboration, accountability, transparency, and trust, prioritizing community voice in our processes, and providing the best safety net for the people who need it most. And this budget demonstrates my commitment to urgently addressing the crisis on our streets with a 24% increase in the homelessness spending countywide. There's no bigger or tougher problem right now than making sure thousands of community members have a pathway off the street and into housing, because we all want to live in a community where everyone has a safe place to call home. As a baseline, we're not letting a single shelter bed close and are focusing efforts on a strong, geographically diverse shelter system to meet people where they are. We are directing a total of $285 million to housing placements, rental assistance, and support services for people experiencing homelessness. This includes $9.5 million for shelter beds, including in motel and village-style shelters, and more street outreach workers. The budget supports the Homelessness Response Action Plan we announced in March, which calls for partnership to shelter or house an additional 2,700 people by December 31st, 2025. It builds from the multi-government community sheltering strategy that will add 1,000 shelter beds in 2 years, along with hundreds more behavioral health beds.
That's Multnomah County Commission Chair Jessica Vega Peterson. The city of Grants Pass, Oregon, is in the national spotlight as the U.S. Supreme Court is hearing a case challenging the city's use of anti-camping and anti-sleeping regulations that some say target homeless people unfairly. Here are some of the arguments made before the Supreme Court in Washington, D.C. this week, starting with the city of Grants Pass defending its actions.
Like cities nationwide, Grants Pass relies on camping laws to protect its public spaces. These generally applicable laws prohibit specific conduct and are essential to public health and safety. The Ninth Circuit tied cities' hands by constitutionalizing the policy debate over how to address growing encampments. It's holding that the Eighth Amendment bars Grants Pass from enforcing its camping laws is wrong for three reasons. First, the cruel and unusual punishments clause governs which punishments are permitted, not what conduct can be prohibited. Second, no precedent supports the Ninth Circuit's rule. Respondents in the United States abandon its reliance on Powell. Instead, they misread Robinson to bar any punishment for involuntary conduct that's linked to a status. But Robinson held only that states cannot outlaw the status of drug addiction. It made clear that they can prohibit conduct like drug use. This court should not rewrite Robinson six decades later. Third, the Ninth Circuit's approach has proven unworkable. The Eighth Amendment does not tell courts who is involuntarily homeless, what shelter is adequate, or what time, place, and manner regulations are allowed. But in 35 suits and counting, federal courts are now deciding everything from the exact size of campsites in San Rafael to the adequacy of empty beds at specific shelters, like the Gospel Rescue Mission in Grants Pass. And cities are struggling to apply arbitrary, shifting standards in the field. This court should reverse and end the Ninth Circuit's failed experiment, which has fueled the spread of encampments while harming those it purports to protect.
And some places with camping bans throughout the country preventing houseless people from sleeping in public places include Portland, Missouri, Tennessee, Texas, and San Diego. And now homeless advocates across the country worry about what the U.S. Supreme Court will do in that case involving Grants Pass, Oregon versus a woman named Gloria Johnson. Edwin J. Vieira reports.
The Supreme Court's case, Grants Pass versus Gloria Johnson, could upend homeless populations nationwide. The case centers around whether municipalities can fine or ticket people for sleeping outside when there's no shelter available. Connecticut had an 8-year decline in homelessness, but the last two point-in-time counts indicate it's rising again. Sarah Fox with the Connecticut Coalition to End Homelessness says ticketing and fining homeless people only harms them.
It in fact prolongs their experience of homelessness, and once someone is engaged with the criminal legal system, it impacts and affects every other part of their life and their world.
She says the state needs to work proactively to reduce homelessness, such as tackling the affordable housing crisis. Connecticut has a shortage of more than 98,000 affordable rental homes. Fox says an interagency council on homelessness can ensure homeless people have better access to services, but she adds more funding will create a more effective system for sheltering homeless people. Homelessness has risen 6% nationally since 2017. Anne Oliva with the National Alliance to End Homelessness finds affordable housing and services are key to ending homelessness. She says along with state and local level work, federal investments can help squelch rising homelessness.
Investments by Congress in housing affordability, that means rental assistance for everybody who is eligible for rental assistance. Right now, only one out of every four households that's eligible for federal rental assistance can get it because of funding challenges.
Based on the Supreme Court's ruling, she feels ordinances criminalizing homelessness could increase. Even so, Oliva adds that all three levels of government should be aware of actual solutions to curb homelessness. This is Edwin J. Vieira.
Native voters are poised to have a great deal of political power in this year's election. The swing state of Nevada has about 62,000 urban Indians, according to the University of Nevada, Reno. Now one organization in this nearby state is aiming to elevate the voices and needs of Native voters, as Alex Gonzalez reports.
A Nevada grassroots organization has launched its inaugural endorsement process for the 2024 elections in an effort to champion indigenous voices in the Silver State. Taylor Patterson with Native Voters Alliance Nevada says the state is getting better about tribal and indigenous representation, but contends there's still a long way to go. Nevada is home to 21 federally recognized tribes and 28 reservations,
but only one Native legislator.
Patterson says they saw the need to be more engaged with issues from the top to the bottom of the ticket.
I think very easily we can forget that Native people are everyday people. I think it's been painted in a very specific way. It still is very much a person of the past, but there are people that are in all different spaces that are engaging with the government in a multitude of ways that need to be represented.
Patterson says the state does have elected officials who understand the needs of the Native community, but hopes the new initiative will give those who are not familiar with the Native space an opportunity to learn more. Last summer, Republican Governor Joe Lombardo expanded Nevada's effective absentee system for elections program, which requires election clerks to meet with all tribes located in their respective jurisdictions to coordinate voting locations prior to elections. Patterson says they've had a good response from candidates, and she's pleased to know that officials are starting to realize the meaning and value of an endorsement from Native Voters Alliance Nevada. She says her organization can help provide politicians with access to indigenous communities.
In recent years, there's been so much made of sort of this BIPOC label, and I very often have to remind all sorts of people, whether those are federal agencies or elected officials, you're not truly working with the BIPOC vote share or BIPOC people if you're not working with the I.
Patterson says the endorsement process will be instrumental to shaping policy and governance in the Silver State. For Nevada News Service, I'm Alex Gonzalez.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for KBOO News In-Depth. At 6, it's Rose City Native Radio. Then at 7, American Indian Airwaves. Tonight's weather, cloudy skies, a good chance of rain, the low down to 48. Tomorrow's weather for Friday, cloudy rainy skies continue, a high of 54. Today in history, on this date in 1990, the Hubble Space Telescope was placed in orbit. The quote of the day is from Edwin Hubble. Equipped with his five senses, man explores the universe around him and calls the adventure science. Squad member Summer Lee wins her primary election with a pro-peace platform. President Biden signs huge foreign aid bills, including support for Ukraine and Israel. And the Arizona State House repeals an abortion ban as California moves to welcome Arizona doctors. With more on the stories impacting our democracy, here's today's edition of 2024 Talks.
Welcome to 2024 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
It's not good enough to send bombs to Israel and send Band-Aids to Gaza, right? We need to stop the bombing. We need to stop the bleeding before we can even do anything else.
Progressive Summer Lee, the first Black woman elected to Congress from Pennsylvania, says her primary victory shows it's possible to be pro-peace and win. Tuesday's vote in that battleground also solidified a closely watched and likely expensive Senate race. Incumbent Democrat Bob Casey will face former hedge fund CEO David McCormick, who says Casey's a do-nothing career politician.
Bob Casey's defining achievement in his political life, 30 years in political office, has been to be the son of Bob Casey Sr.
Former President Donald Trump attacked McCormick as a liberal Wall Street Republican in 2022 before endorsing him this time. Democrats charge that McCormick actually lives in Connecticut. The primary highlighted weaknesses for both Trump and President Joe Biden. Former South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley took 17% of the Republican votes, even though she's no longer running. 50,000 Democrats wrote in candidates, many to protest Biden's handling of Gaza. After months of contentious debate in Congress, Biden has signed $95 billion in foreign aid, including critical military help for Ukraine.
It's a good day for America, it's a good day for Europe, and it's a good day for world peace, for real. This is consequential.
More than a dozen Senate Republicans voted against the aid bills, as did two Democrats and one independent. Jewish Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders criticized the lack of debate on more than $25 billion for Israel in spite of public opposition to the war.
The U.S. military is not dropping 2,000-pound bombs on civilian apartment buildings. The U.S. military is not doing that, but we are supplying those bombs.
After several failed attempts, the Arizona House has voted to repeal a near-total 1864 abortion ban. Three Republicans voted with Democrats in the GOP-led chamber. Meanwhile, California Democrats propose letting Arizona doctors cross the border and perform abortion services for Arizona residents. State Assemblywoman Lori Wilson says patients should be able to get the care they need from their own doctors.
To our neighbors in Arizona and beyond, we say, California will protect your right to choose. California is a safe place.
Finally, several Trump associates and Arizona lawmakers now face felony charges for putting forward fake electors and trying to take the state Biden won in 2020. The accused include former Trump chief of staff Mark Meadows and disgraced lawyer Rudy Giuliani. Meanwhile, yesterday, the U.S. Supreme Court also agreed to rule on Trump's claim of total lifelong presidential immunity from criminal prosecution. I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service.
Millions of people throughout the West live within thousands of feet of operational oil wells. Suzanne Potter reports on a movement underway in California. It's designed to get companies to plug and clean up low-producing wells and use buffer zones around them.
Leaders concerned about pollution and climate change are raising awareness about a ballot measure this fall on whether the state should mandate buffer zones around new oil and gas wells. Voters will be asked to uphold or revoke Senate Bill 1137, which would require a 3,200-foot setback around any new well near schools, neighborhoods, and hospitals. Megan Solly Wells is a former mayor of Culver City and a leader with the group Elected Officials to Protect America. She fought to phase out the Inglewood oil field and says no community should be a sacrifice zone.
A study from Harvard found that in California, 34,000 people have died in 2018 prematurely from fossil fuel air pollution. These figures are three times higher than other studies.
The Stop the Energy Shutdown campaign, supported by the California Independent Petroleum Association, opposes the setback rule, arguing that it could constrict local supply and cost jobs in the industry. A court put the bill on hold pending the outcome of the November election. A yes vote would keep the setbacks. A no vote would rescind them. Clean energy advocates are also speaking out against companies that operate older, low-producing wells rather than pay to shut them down and seal them up properly. Fullerton City Council member Ahmad Zahra says Assembly Bill 2716 would incentivize their closure by charging companies $10,000 a day to operate these so-called stripper wells.
We have over 40,000 oil wells currently sitting orphan or idle, leaking methane and volatile organic compounds into the air, water, and the soil.
Other states are following California's lead. New Mexico State Representative Debbie Sarignana is sponsoring a bill to require setbacks near sensitive locations, since more than 32,000 children in that state attend school within a mile of an oil and gas extraction site.
Over 80 schools in northwestern New Mexico, or the San Juan Basin, and the southeastern New Mexico, the Permian Basin, are within 1 mile of an oil and gas well. Some schools are surrounded by dozens and even hundreds of wells within a single mile.
For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
The Yurok tribe uses wellness courts to provide a path for healing, and the NYO Games kick off in Anchorage for tween and teen competitors. For more, here's today's edition of National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. In California, the Yurok tribe's justice system is providing a path for healing. Yurok Tribal Chief Judge Abby Abenanti is well known for her work in the legal field. She's the first Native American woman to be a member of the California State Bar. Judge Abby, as she's commonly referred to, recently joined tribal leaders, advocates, law enforcement, and others in Sacramento for a day devoted to justice issues. Her work with the Yurok tribe, located hundreds of miles away from the state's capital city, centers on wellness.
Essentially, what we're trying to do at home is to build a court system that would have been sort of the natural evolution of our value system. So that means that our practices are much different than what you learn in the state court. So my job there is to help people return to their responsible roles in community.
Judge Abby says they do more intensive work with each person that comes before the court, and they ask them to think as the wellness court as their extended family with special expertise. She says it's very different than state court, with traditional values being a vital part of helping people.
We look at culture as a way of living. These are how you live. This is what your value system is as a human being, and these are your responsibilities. And once you get people back into that, walking on that road, they just act differently, you know. And we've had a lot, the invasion brought us a lot of problems, and we have to face those and we have to push them back.
Judge Abby says based on their value system, the wellness court has advocates who serve as mentors and friends that take on the role of cultural aunts and uncles.
And they walk with people, they help them, they talk to them, they're there for them, and they become part of their extended family. How do you, you know, look, you need to test today. You didn't test. And if you're dirty, then just tell me and we'll figure out what we're going to do about it. You know, so we get people, we encourage people, and we help them find their way back.
Judge Abby says they also focus on other wellness, behavioral health, housing, and requirements people need to get them back to where they need to be in society. Tribal officials say it's essential for justice to include traditional knowledge, culture, and spirituality. Philip Williams, a Yurok Tribal Council member, says Native people get lost in today's society.
Colonialism has stripped away most of everything that we are. And so that's why a lot of our people are in addiction and alcoholism, because they don't know who they are. Where do they fit in this world? And so part of that that keeps us going in that is our traditions, you know, our dances, our ceremonies. And one of the most basic parts I think that people miss is your prayer. You know, the elders teach you to pray every day before you wake up. You wash your face, you pray, and then you start your day. A lot of the people don't get that. And so we're trying to replicate that to give a person something to live for in their life.
The Yurok tribe and Judge Abby's work are not just on the reservation. They're helping other tribes and the urban Native population through their close connection with the social service organization in San Francisco, the Friendship House. We'll feature work being done there in our next story. This series, a collaboration with First Nations Experience Television with support from the Public Welfare Foundation. The Native Youth Olympic Senior Games kick off Thursday in Anchorage, Alaska. Students grades 7th through 12th will take part in 3 days of competition. Athletes not only test their skills needed for everyday life, but the games promote sportsmanship, healthy living, and leadership skills. Thursday's games include opening ceremonies, the toe kick, wrist carry, and the Alaskan high kick. The games continue through the week with closing ceremonies and awards on Saturday. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
This week's Point Puzzle has us thinking about tech and what we're buying this week. For more, we go to Pearl Star from KPOV Bend with the Point Puzzle, a weekly radio puzzle challenging listeners with words and logic.
It's time for the puzzle.
When is a half a quarter? Last week, I asked for two answers that are both physical things. Well, the answers are the moon, when you see half a moon, it's the first quarter or the last quarter, and 50 cents, half of which is a quarter. Our winner this week is Brett Yost, who listens to KPOV in Bend, Oregon.
Ooh, oh, I go crazy.
For the new puzzle, start with a tech company, drop the first and last letters, insert a T in the middle, and get something that many people will buy this week. So again, start with a tech company, drop the first and last letters, and then insert a T in the middle to get something that many people will buy this week. When you have the answer, send your name, your answer, and the station on which you hear the puzzle to puzzle@kpov.org. I'll select one winner from among any answers received by this Saturday.
I will buy you a garden.
This has been Pearl Stark with your Point Puzzle for the week of April 22nd. The Point Puzzle is produced at KPOV, High Desert Community Radio.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Thursday, April 25th, 2024. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Suzanne Potter, Edwin J. Vieira, and Alex Gonzalez. The producer is Annette Newell, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Public News Service and Native Voice One. The director of evening news is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Annette Newell. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News In Depth. Up next.
You're tuned in to listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
Welcome to the Global